Welcome to Political Rewind. I've got a lot to get to today. We're going to talk in depth about clearing up some of the potential confusion about what President Trump's executive orders on health care mean. We should say that within the last 2 hours, the president had a photo op in the cabinet room and ended up talking on for quite a long time on any number of subjects, but particularly pertinent to today's conversation. He declared Obamacare dead. He said it is dead and gone. And I want to talk in a minute about the political implications of that, but a couple of other headlines. The North Koreans have put out a statement about diplomacy with the United States. Basically, they say North Korea is not ruling out diplomacy, but, quote, before we can engage in diplomacy with the Trump administration, we want to send a clear message that the Democratic People's Republic of Korea has a reliable defensive and offensive capability to counter any aggression from the United States. We will almost certainly hear something in response, I would think, from President Trump on that. Jim Galloway, the lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is here. Jim, we got a lot to do today.
Obamacare is dead. Long live Trump care?
Well, that's exactly what I want to talk about. And Andy Miller of Georgia Health News is here to help us unravel what's going on in terms of the executive orders that Trump has issued. Thank you for being here, Andy.
Glad to be here, Bill.
But Beth Shapiro, who, of course, a longtime pollster, political consultant, now resting on her laurels and enjoying life. Beth, thank you for coming in.
I'm glad to be here. I'm looking forward to finding out where I should send my memorial contributions in honor or memory of Obamacare.
Well, let's just start quickly with the political implications of all this. So I think Jim suggested it, Beth. On one hand, the president, helpful to his base perhaps to some extent, to declare Obamacare dead since he wanted to kill it all along. On the other hand, you broke it, you bought it. It's now up to him.
I look forward to seeing the details of his plan, which he promised over the course of the campaign would be the greatest plan ever that would cover everybody at lower cost. So I welcome the details and look forward to seeing that implemented.
And yet the corpse is still there. Yeah. Is it not?
Still alive.
This is very Halloweenish.
Yeah, but just from a partisan political point of view, he's now essentially said he owns whatever happens next in health care.
Well, first of all,
without regard to whether there's legislation or not.
First of all, what he's done is this is a pretty old trick in politics. You declare victory first of all, and then you worry about the details later.
All right, he did have lunch, Andy, with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell today, and apparently they just were out on the White House lawn talking to reporters. Essentially said that we couldn't be closer, we couldn't be more in better harmony in terms of working out our agenda. And Andy, the president continues to say that he thinks there will be a health care bill, if not in the next months ahead, eventually the Republicans will pass one. Yeah?
Well, it will yet to be determined on that bill. I think that there is a bill out there that would do some real good, and that is something that's being worked on in the Senate. Lamar Alexander, Patty Murray are working on a bill that would be a bipartisan legislation that would actually start paying these payments to insurance companies that Trump is cutting off. It would also, on the other side, give Republicans a little bit more flexibility at the state level in terms of what health plans can be approved and run in individual states. So that's basically what's out there now, and a lot of people are on board with that.
Is there any indication at all that the Lamar Alexander Patty Murphy measure is going to move anytime soon?
Well, it's getting more momentum after President Trump said, "Look, we're not going to pay these insurance payments anymore," but it stopped in midstream a few weeks ago when Republicans decided to go again at another attempt at repealing and replacing Obamacare. It got stuck there, but now there's indications that there's more momentum now.
You know, what's interesting about what you're saying, Andy, Beth, in this photo op in the cabinet room, the president took credit for getting Patty Murray and Lamar Alexander moving again. He said, see, if I hadn't done what I had done, he said, and this is an indirect quote, nevertheless, it captures the sense of what he said. He said they'd all be sitting around having a long lunch in the Senate dining room. They wouldn't be trying to work out a health care compromise.
If that makes him feel good, fine. I think that the problem for the president is that he comes to these conclusions that because of my tough negotiating skills and prowess, then things get done. But the problem is that he has no understanding. He appears to have no understanding of the policies behind what needs to be done, or no understanding of the subject matter of the issue. So for him, it's just all about posturing, as opposed to, here are the things I want to accomplish in this bill, and if I posture, then I can get them accomplished. It's more a matter of just the posturing for posturing's sake.
But I'll tell you, the one thing that's different now, that's different on this Monday than was on the previous Monday, is that President Trump has singled out insurance companies as the bad guys in this. And I'm wondering, Andy, how do they take this?
Before you answer that question,
whoops,
Galloway has set up a soundbite that I want to play from this cabinet room media avail, because he spoke directly to that. And then, Andy, we need to explain to the best of our ability to our listeners what's really going on in terms of what President Trump said.
The gravy train ended the day I knocked out the insurance company's money, which was last week. Hundreds of millions of dollars a month handed to the insurance companies for very little reason, believe me. I want the money to go to the people. I want the money to go to poor people that need it. I want the money to go to people that need proper health care, not to insurance companies, which is where it's going. As of last week, I ended that.
Andy, is the money going to poor people?
It is going to consumers. It's what these insurance payments were, they went from the federal government to the insurers, but the insurers were required as a pass-through to lower deductibles and copays for many lower-income people on the insurance exchanges. So what are insurance companies doing as a result? They don't get this money, so they're raising premiums substantially, over 50% in Georgia. And because of that, this is a double whammy, because not only will more people be uninsured as a result of this move, but it's going to cost the federal government and taxpayers more than keeping the insurance payments in place.
One of our favorite tweeters, Ted Barfield, challenged us on this issue on Friday, and he sent us an article from Consumer Reports, which I appreciate. If you qualify for a CSR, Consumer Reports, what does CSR stand for?
Cost-sharing reductions.
Okay. You're still going to get the subsidies because insurers are required to provide them whether they get reimbursed by the government or not. So that's true, right?
That is absolutely true.
Okay, but insurers would compensate for that reduced revenue by raising premiums for 2018. Okay.
And those premiums, tell me if I'm wrong here, Andy, would be paid by people who aren't necessarily who are in that gap between the poor and the wealthy. I mean, they're the
right. What happens is most of the people in the exchange, 85-80% of them, get subsidies to help them afford the cost of health care. As premiums go up, their subsidies go up. So there's no net real effect on them of this latest
Trump. So it's the 15% who are left in the exchanges.
And those are the people at the higher end of the income scale for those people that get individual insurance.
So, Beth, we're talking probably people who are making $50,000, $60,000 a year. It strikes me that in many ways those might be on the upper end of the Trump sweet spot, the people who voted for him.
It certainly sounds like it. And I think what's very frustrating to Democrats in particular is that nowhere in this conversation is there anything about providing health care and making sure people have adequate health care. It's all about saving money, cutting expenses, and it's never about the actual Americans, human beings that will no longer have access to health care.
All right. I've got to interrupt, but Beth Shapiro, since you talked about spending money, saving money, it's time to spend a little money if you love Georgia Public Broadcasting's radio shows. It's a pledge drive right now. We would love your support to make GPB Radio stronger than ever. Here's Drew Dawson and Bradley George tell you how you can do it. I am personally always really gratified, and I know our whole team is, when we hear that there are any number of you out there who say that you support GPB, at least in part because you like Political Rewind so much. If you're one of those people, thank you so much for your help. Andy Miller from Georgia Health News, Beth Shapiro, and Jim Galloway are here. We're trying to give you a little insight about what the executive orders the president issued last week do to health care today. Jim?
Yeah, in the last segment, we kind of went over who could see some really steep premium increases over the next few months. But since we have Andy here, what's the state of the pre-existing condition? To me, that's the most important thing that Obamacare tackled.
And successfully. Obamacare is still the law of the land, but in the executive order that Trump issued before he did the cutoff of the insurer payments, basically would allow more association health plans and short-term health policies. Now, what they could do would be provide fewer benefits and basically it may allow insurance companies to find healthier groups of people to cover. And for the short-term health policies, it could allow insurance companies to say, okay, this person has had a cancer, this person has had a heart attack or mental health problems. We'll cover you, but we're going to exclude those particular conditions.
You know, Beth, one of the things that's really developed out of all this, two things, well, lots of things have developed. Number one, there are now at least 15 states who have already filed lawsuits challenging the president's authority to remove the so-called CSRs. But another thing that's happening is that in at least, I know Oregon is certainly one example, even though insurance companies were at a point where they're supposed to have filed their plans for 2018, as a result of the executive order on Friday, there are those of them, like in Oregon, going back and saying, we want to refile, we've got to raise our rates.
I'm not surprised. I think that this order just completely upends the insurance industry, the health insurance industry, the health insurance markets. I can't help but go to the political implications as I think about 2018 and the midterm elections that are coming up, when we're going to have more people unable to buy insurance next year, people who had been able to afford it through the exchanges, where policies will change and pre-existing conditions that once were covered are no longer covered. A lot of these changes affecting what's now the Republican coalition, the Trump base, and I just can't help but think that there aren't enough Republican senators looking ahead at what these implications could mean, that might not bring enough of them to the table to work with Patty Murray and the Democrats to actually come up with some type of plan that will meet the needs of both parties, with each having to leave something on the table.
In other words, where does Jeff Flake go in Arizona?
Yeah.
Is he willing to participate in the Alexander Murray negotiations?
At this point, that might be his last best hope because his willingness to speak his conscience and take on the president apparently has hurt him quite a bit.
He's down to 18% favorable now.
Andy, you wrote in Georgia Health News. By the way, for our listeners, people can all look at Georgia Health News. You're online, and there's no paywall or anything.
It go right there.
GeorgiaHealthNews.com. Andy, you wrote in one of your stories that Georgia is less likely to have the kind of major impact in terms of rate increases as other states might. Why is that?
Well, as a result of this order, because three out of the four insurance companies in the exchange had already gotten approval for very high rate increases, and they had under the assumption that these insurer payments would be cut off. There was one insurer, Kaiser Permanente, that did not get as high of a rate increase. They only went for 30% instead of 50%. So I'm sure that they're talking to the feds right now about going up over 50% as well.
Can they do that? Is there any kind of federal regulation that would prevent an insurance company from asking for an increase past the deadline at which they're supposed to make
it's a state issue, is it not?
Well, the state has already ruled, but it's up to the feds now, and we still don't have the actual financial information for insurance agents. That won't come out till the end of the month. So I imagine there's a lot of insurance companies knocking on the Fed's door right now saying we need to go up with our rates.
What's the timetable here? I mean, when will people who are going to pay these steep increases start to feel the burn?
November 1 is when open enrollment starts for the exchanges for individual and family coverage. Now, there are several things that the administration is doing to kind of depress the number and really to undermine the whole individual market. One thing is they've cut the enrollment period down in half. One is they're shutting down a lot of the insurance exchange work on Sundays. They've also really cut drastically the marketing and enrollment activity that they normally do to try to get healthy people to sign up.
So with all this approaching, Jim, November 1st, it's another reason why I wonder if today, from a political point of view, it was the smartest thing for the president to declare Obamacare is dead. So guess what, folks? Whatever happens on November 1st, you can't blame on Obamacare. He didn't mean that, but isn't that the implication? But
yeah, and I'm waiting for the thing is Trump's actions have all been negations.
Right.
You haven't seen a proposition yet that we can actually tag as Trump care.
Many people call it sabotage, pure and simple, trying to sabotage the individual marketplace.
So I'd like to come back to Andy on a question about Georgia. Because this is a statewide program, we have a lot of listeners well outside the metro area, and we have what I think everybody would agree is a rural healthcare crisis in Georgia. What are the implications for rural communities? Because if I'm not mistaken, we only have one provider that's even been offering policies on the exchange in many parts of Georgia. So what are the implications of all this for
perfect
rural
question.
Georgia?
It's a cliffhanger because, Andy, before you answer that question, we need to remind people that GPB Radio needs their support, and all of us appreciate every contribution that our listeners make. Here's Drew and Bradley. Thanks, Bradley George. You know, the work that Bradley George does in his role as overseeing our Atlanta news gathering operation is another reason that we hope you'll think about supporting Georgia Public Broadcasting. Our radio effort depends on you. Our news gathering is, to some extent, in your hands. So, again, thank you if you've already donated in this drive, and help us if you haven't. Jim, your colleague, Greg Bluestein, he covered the Gay Pride Parade, which was in Atlanta this weekend. And one of the things that it has been pointed out about it is, I don't know what the total number was. I don't know if this was the largest inaugural Gay Pride Parade. I don't know how Trump would figure the numbers, but it was an enormous parade. And more to the point, both Democratic gubernatorial candidates were there.
That was a first.
Most of the candidates for mayor were there, and this wouldn't have happened 10 years ago.
No, and I think anecdotally, there's a lot of evidence that this is in part a reaction to Donald Trump, and what's been happening as far as the transgender persons and the military. The prospect of Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, and we've got the don't forget on December 5th, same day as the Atlanta City runoff, we're going to have the arguments in that Colorado bakery case.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Beth Shapiro, is this mean? I think it means that there's been a genuine normalization and understanding, a broader understanding and acceptance of the gay community than ever before, which I think is clearly a positive thing. But it also speaks to the power that the gay community has at election time, yes?
Yes, it definitely speaks to that power. And I think that one of my favorite quotes is from Dr. King, the moral arc of the universe is long and it bends toward justice. And I think if you look back at the history of the gay political movement in Georgia, you go back 20 or 30 years and the pride parades might have had 200, 300, 400 people. I think that's changed for a couple of reasons. One was in 97 when Kathy Woolard was elected as the first openly gay elected official in the state of Georgia when she was elected to city council. That was accompanied by the increasing power and sophistication of Georgia Equality, the state's premier LGBT political group. And so over the years, we've seen many more openly gay candidates, many more openly gay elected officials. We've seen Georgia Equality evolve into quite a sophisticated political operation, so much so that the last 2 or 3 years, their organization has hooked up with the business community to stop these so-called religious freedom bills. And so I think that that things have changed. For every action, there's an equal and sometimes equal and opposite reaction. It's fomenting somewhat of a backlash. But I do think that the LGBT community is one that is capable of demonstrating a fair amount of political power.
Let me ask you, in this race for mayor, I think we're seeing the LGBT vote kind of with strength that if there's one race in Georgia where this group of voters can truly make a difference, it's the race for mayor of Atlanta. What percentage of voters next on the first Tuesday are going to be LGBT voters, in your estimation? I know it's a guess.
Yeah, I think that I think that it's probably 10, 11, 12% of the vote. I think that that what we've seen over the years is that the LGBT community is one that has achieved results through political power, and so it's a community that does vote, I think, in a little bit higher proportion than some other demographic groups. So I would say 10, 11, 12% of the vote. And not just Tuesday the 7th. Early voting started today.
Yeah, it starts.
Oh,
yeah.
So
yeah,
they're over voting the next in 3 weeks, yeah.
They're voting in Atlanta.
Do they vote basically as a block? Do they coalesce behind one candidate, or is it going to be spread out among their vote going to be spread out, do you think, among other candidates?
That's a great question, because a lot of that depends on who the opposition is. If in the mayor's race, if there were a bunch of candidates who were just vehemently anti-LGBT, then the vote would coalesce around the most pro-LGBT candidate. But in this case, we've got a field of candidates, all of whom are considered gay-friendly. What's a little bit different this time, though, is that there is an openly gay candidate for mayor, Kathy Woolard, and in the interest of full disclosure, I'm
volunteering
in her campaign. And I think, given her history as a leader in the LGBT movement, as well as her general track record, I do think that there will be a coalescing of the majority, a strong majority of LGBT vote behind her. But that's not to say that every LGBT voter supports her.
Yeah, my sense is that the gay and lesbian vote may be a little more split up this year than it might have been when Kathy Woolard ran for city council the first time.
Or when Mary Norwood ran for mayor 8 years ago.
That's exactly right. Andy, clearly HIV is no longer a problem confined in the gay community, and it hasn't been for a long time. It now is most prevalent in Metro Atlanta, in African American communities. In fact, There are zip codes in this city which have higher rates of HIV-positive individuals than some of the countries in Africa that we think about as having the greatest problems. So how you're going to deal with HIV, really, I'm moderating a debate at the Fulton DeKalb Hospital Authority tomorrow with these candidates. That is an issue we should talk about, isn't it?
It absolutely is, and there are things that can be done to lower the rate. We're one of the highest states in terms of HIV rates in the country. Metro Atlanta's got one of the highest rates in terms of metropolitan areas, and so it's a matter of education. It's a matter of getting PrEP out there, which is basically it's a pill that can prevent transmission. And to lessen the stigma, to be able to have communities talk about this in a way that presents the real health danger here.
All right. I've got to get to another break. But in the interest of being equal in terms of these things, Jim Galloway, you're going to be doing a mayor's debate on Wednesday morning. It's never ending.
Wednesday evening. Buckhead Council of Neighbors.
All right. We got to go back to Drew and Bradley because we are continuing our fund drive and really would love your help supporting our work here at GPB. Welcome back here live in the studio. Jim Galloway, Beth Shapiro, Andy Miller. Andy, we left our listeners hanging. We said that we were going to talk a little bit, based on Beth Shapiro's good question, about what all of this means to rural health care. And, of course, in this state, that's a broad swath of our community.
Well, if it leads to more uninsured people, Bill, it will really affect rural hospitals, which we know are in financial danger all over the state. But another thing it could do is for insurance companies, it may not make an insurer leave rural areas for this coming year. But if they don't find more stability and more support, I suspect you'll see a lot of insurers pull out of rural areas and maybe even some urban areas in 2019 when we see the effects of all this. So yeah, it's going to be a big impact potentially. Maybe not for 2018, but some of these insurers may pull out the following year.
Now, we've had Blue Cross Blue Shield has pulled out of Metro Atlanta.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
And so are there any areas of Georgia that are uncovered or only have one provider?
There are plenty of areas that have just one provider. I would say just about every rural county, that's what we're talking about. And there are some areas like in North Georgia that may only have one provider as well, and Southwest Albany area and places
so,
like
so
that.
So either their choice is going to be paying probably a whole lot more or none.
For those people that are above like the 48,000 level, they're going to see big-time sticker shock, and there's nothing – it's one reason why employer-based health care, job-based health care, is so valued now.
And how much pressure is this going to put on rural hospitals?
It will inevitably lead to more people being uninsured.
You know, Beth, one of the things that we, as we hear Andy describe this to us, is you can unwind a lot of this through executive order, but to declare Obamacare dead, to suggest that that's all you need to do, and even the president is saying he believes Congress has to do something. We are in search still of a new plan for providing health care, regardless of what the president says.
Well, it's an utterly irresponsible thing to do, and it's going to have serious real-world impacts on a lot of people. Even though I live in the metro area, I used to work for the Office of Planning and Budget way back when, traveled all over the state, and have a sense of what rural communities are like. And I just think it's unfair and it's unconscionable to be taking steps that are going to further harm communities where the provision of health care has been on a downward spiral, and where elected officials, I can picture Senator Nan Orrock, who was on a couple of weeks ago, talking about how important the provision of quality health care is to developing rural communities, and all these steps appear to undercut even further the provision of health care in the rural parts of Georgia, and I just think it's wrong.
A poll last week found that two-thirds of Americans want Congress and the White House to work together to fix the system, the current system.
Do you know off the top of your head whose poll that was?
It was Kaiser Family Foundation.
Okay, they're legitimate.
I mean, that's most people. They'd rather go to fixing what we've got rather than repealing and replacing.
Common sense.
All right, so this isn't Tom Faust, our producer, just brought in an interesting note from The Hill. President Trump, during this press briefing he had after his meeting with Mitch McConnell, said that they're going to vote on an Obamacare repeal next year. The Senate is going to do that. I thought it was already dead, Jim. How do they wait until next year?
Number one, I don't know how they wait, but they've got to do tax cuts first, and I'm sure that that's part of it. That they want to at least get something on the table.
Except what we have for months were discussing is the fact they couldn't do tax reform until they dealt with health care, because it was in health care they were going to find savings they could put into the tax reform bill.
Right. But now we have a health care system that's officially dead and yet walking among us. So it's a very, very, I mean, we've got zombies on the prowl here.
All right. It's it is kind of what we've come to expect, Beth. We're never quite sure one day to the next what the president's thinking and going to do. And by the way, we should point out that we know that Obamacare has significant problems. It isn't as if he is unwinding a fabulous system, right?
No, I agree. I was on a previous show with Andy where we talked about that, where there definitely are fixes that are needed, but what's also needed is some informed leadership that brings both parties together and figures out how to get this thing fixed. It's just, as a Democrat, I could be cheering the total chaos in the Republican Party, but I can't, because their chaos is leading to real-world harm.
Yeah.
And I just hope that there's some Republican leaders who will step forward and begin, at least on health care, to move something forward that actually helps the American people.
Andy, you're our health care guy. You get the last word.
Well, Obamacare did not contain costs and medical costs and premiums increases, but it did do what Jim talked about in terms of pre-existing conditions. People with a health condition didn't have to worry under Obamacare about getting premiums that were so high or even, not getting insurance at all. It also added 20 million people to the insurance rolls.
This all is, with everything else in the Trump administration, we will watch and see how things develop. Andy Miller of Georgia Health News, Beth Shapiro, Jim Galloway. By the way, we didn't say, Jim, that our listeners can read you on Wednesdays and Sundays in the Dead Tree edition of the paper. And you do continue to post all the time in Politically Georgia, your new political website.
Right. You just have to pay a pittance.
A little
bit.
That's all. All right. Well, let's not have the people pay quite yet for Politically Georgia while you're here, because here we'd really like them to help contribute during our drive to raise the money we need to keep things going here at Georgia Public Broadcasting. Thanks to all of you. And let me take it back over to Drew and to Bradley to tell you how you can help us during this drive.